Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The National Blast podcast with Keenan Skelly. Join Keenan and guests as they blast you to a place that is certainly not boring, yet still giving you highlights from areas in cyber where key policies and legislation are needed, exist, but aren't enforced, or no one is even talking about it. Knowledge is power. Now, more than ever.
Hi, everybody. It's Keenan Skelly, and welcome to my latest episode of The National Blast. I'm very excited about today. We are going to be talking about all of the things that means hacking and hackers and ethical hacking and. We're going to talk about it today. And our special guest is John Jackson, who's going to tell us a little bit about himself and some of the things that really interest him that we're going to dig into deeper today.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I'm a senior application security engineer and a hacker and the founder of the hacking group, Sakura Samurai.
Ooh, Sakura, what does that group do?
So we do ethical, quote unquote, research.
What does that entail exactly? You said ethical with a heavy kind of emphasis, so I feel like there's a lot more there.
Sure. I mean, the reason I said it that way is because when it comes to what we do, I mean, we primarily focus on finding CVEs and vulnerabilities within vulnerability disclosure and bug bounty programs. But the reason I put heavy emphasis on ethical is because it's a term that's just kind of thrown around loosely. And the reason that, you know, we have to use that term is because of government. A lot of the times we don't want to scare the US government.
And so what I gather from that and how you're kind of phrasing it is that anybody who's hacking is really hacking. And the entire point of it is to identify vulnerabilities and identify what can be fixed and what can't be fixed. And I think there's some confusion when we talk about what that means in today's kind of world where we've put such an emphasis on how bad the word hacker is. And, you know, everybody's rebranding themselves as security researchers and saying, well, I do this for good or I do this for bad. What do you think that means in terms of ethical?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, I don't like it. I don't like the rebrand to security researcher. I think it's more confusing to go by security researcher in the public than it is to go by hacker. Society knows the word hacker. It scares them. It scares the government. It scares a lot of people. It scares companies. But security researcher just doesn't resonate. And I feel like they're trying to do this rebrand to make it seem like, you know, hackers aren't these scary people, but they could just do that with the word hacker.
I did a talk recently where I talked about the difference between a hacker and a security researcher, and it's complicated. And I do believe that a lot of people feel safer when you say it, but I think the probably the biggest thing that we should do is make the word hacker not the guy in the hoodie, right? Hashtag no hoodies. How about we just have normal everyday people who are hackers and do good things?
See, I have a theory on that too.
Oh, hit me.
I say, if you want to wear a hoodie, wear a hoodie. Wear whatever you want. Literally, wear whatever you want when you're hacking. That's the other thing too. Like, I'm not a big fan of the, you know, hackers don't wear hoodie type of movements, because I really think that the reality is you can wear whatever you want. Like,
I think
we're not all in the hoodies, but
I think the message there, maybe you're right, should be kind of massaged a little bit to say, wear whatever you want, but we all don't wear hoodies, right?
Sure, yeah.
That way it kind of gets across that stereotype that only people who do this are that person in a hoodie.
Yeah, it just had a better flow to it, I think. And, you know, so they kind of rolled with it. But I can tell you, like, from personal experience, knowing hackers on all ranges and all spectrums, that they don't like that, you know, especially like the darker hackers and the old school hackers. They don't like that.
Yeah, I bet they don't. You know, one of my super favorite films as I was growing up was Sneakers. I totally loved that movie. And I loved it, even though it wasn't down and dirty like hacking. I loved the idealism behind it. And my God, they're hacking things for good. And they're really out there trying to save the world and make corporations pay those righteous bastards. And I really just loved that. I loved that kind of concept. And I think over the last, 15, 20 years, I'm not giving away my age there at all. 15, 20 years, we've seen the role of the hacker change in the world of media and what people are exposed to, what young kids are exposed to, what adults and corporations are exposed to. And I think a big part of that issue is definitely where media has come in and created their own versions of this that don't necessarily represent the reality.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of gatekeeping kind of on both sides. When you talk about black hats, when you talk about white hats, which, like I said, that's not an existent term.
Tell me more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't think white hats is really a term that exists. And the reason I say that is because if you start to work with hackers, right, on any range, like let's focus on the security researchers, right, the bug bounty hunters. If you see what they do, I can tell you right now that most of them, if not all of them, have violated just ethical hacking, like 100%. Almost all of them have gone out of scope. And that's the reality of it. So can you call yourself a white hat if you violated the law at any point within hacking? And that's really the reality of it. It doesn't matter how you report it, because that's kind of the same circumstance that gray hats and black hats have is, they've hacked for good, but they're being criminalized, right? They're being looked at as criminals. And then you have white hats that will hack out of scope to bring something in scope. That's illegal too.
Yep.
Right. So it just shouldn't be illegal to begin with.
So yeah, that's what I kind of want to dig into here. And I think you're absolutely right. What we're talking about is there are several laws that are in place right now where if a security researcher, we'll go ahead and say hacker because it does sound way cooler. When a hacker does some things in an environment to actually prove that the vulnerabilities exist, and that violates a couple of very specific laws. But when it came out, the idea was to protect people against invasive privacy and invasive company kind of actions where other people are digging into your data and sharing it with other people. But the problem with that is that as cybersecurity has become far and away more complex than it was when that particular act was made, now we have all of these different kinds of complexities of what does being in your network mean? What does having access mean? What does it mean that I verified your data on the dark net? And I think some of these are really interesting questions to me. And I'm dying to know what you think about, how all of that fits together and how, as we start to see things like breach verification acts come forward, how we might use these other pieces of legislation as a springboard to actually do what we're supposed to do and, take care of whoever finds the hack, whoever reports the vulnerability, because they reported it because they wanted, to change things and make the world better and, butterflies and rainbows. Tell me more.
We have to focus on intent. And that's really what it comes down to. There's so many complexities when it comes to the law, especially when you start to talk about CFAA, Computer Fraud Abuse Act. And when you start to think about it, if I find credentials for some sort of government server on the darknet, and I log in to verify if it's legit, and I report that, I'm violating CFAA. It doesn't matter. If they don't have a bug bounty program, if they don't have a vulnerability disclosure program, like I'm violating CFAA. And you have to ask yourself, is that right? Should it be that way, right? Because the US government wants better protections for these systems, especially the legacy ones, but they're not willing to do the legwork that is required to get better protection, which is enabling hackers to get in there and to hack. And there's a lot of aspects to that too. Sometimes it's not as simple as just running a vulnerability disclosure program. Because for instance, when Sakura Samurai did research on Fermilabs, we got a little bit of lashback. We got burned a little bit to where we had to kind of scale back the way that we went about doing disclosures, especially with U.S. government. And it really put a bad taste in my mouth for doing U.S. government research.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of hackers who are in the same position. You know, I currently work at a company with a fairly well-known hacker, and most of my friends are in this category. And if I, you know, had a dollar for every time I heard about them being sued or heard about them, you know, having the organization come back and blame them for the hack and tell them that it was actually them that hacked it in the first place. You know, those things get really complicated when you're in this field and you're just trying to have a job too, right? I mean, why would anybody get into this field? Why would anybody be interested in securing networks if they're just going to get trashed all the time?
Yeah, it takes a special kind of person to want to do it, because there's a lot of things that, you know, end up happening, especially when you're doing research. I mean, for instance, we did research on the Indian government. We had the U.S. government help us disclose. And we've had nation state actors, you know, try to social engineer us. We've had psychological operations launched against us because they didn't like that we helped out the Indian government. Like, these are things that the information security field, they don't know much about. And it's because they don't want to know about it because it's scary and it's very black hat. And, you know, they look at black hats as these sort of, vigilante, just type of people that they want to stay very far away from. But that's the root of hacking. Like, that's where hacking came from.
I totally agree with that. I always create the analogy about when I was in the Army, I went through EOD school and I learned how to defuse bombs and nuclear and chemical and all that fun stuff. Great job, by the way. Super blast. But if you want to know how to take bombs apart and fix them, then you have to know how they're put together, especially when it came to IEDs, right? If you want to know how the bad guys are thinking, then you have to know how the bad guys are thinking so that you can address and defend and protect in the aftermath of what happens from that. And specifically as an EOD tech, being able to recognize, you know, TTPs of very specific threat actors and know that that's that because I've done it myself, and we've been able to tie that intelligence back. That's crucial. And that's not new to hacking. I mean, this is a concept that the military and Department of Defense and, you know, militaries around the world have used for decades and hundreds of years, I'm sure. The better intelligence that you have about the offensive piece of it, the more intelligence you're going to have about how to defend. So what do you think we can do to actually change that part of it?
We have to we have to start with redefining the CFAA first and foremost. Like, it's old, it's dated, it needs to be ripped out, and it needs to be readdressed, and it needs to focus on the aspect of intent. Like, if you're logging into a system, you're exploiting a server, you're doing something like that, but you're not exfiltrating data, you're not doing anything like that, then you need to be able to operate freely.
I think his bat phone is calling.
Oh God, I don't even know who this is. Yeah, well, that's taken care of. Yeah, so that's really what it comes down to. And you said, you talked about the military. I think that's a great point, because I was in the Marine Corps. And I can tell you right now, you know, we were out there playing with grenades, playing with machine guns. We were doing all that kind of stuff. We were learning, you know, left and right lateral limits, right? For shooting machine guns, right? We were learning about the different rates of fire. And we weren't just learning it, we were doing it.
Yep.
Because sitting there with a textbook, Marine Corps didn't play textbook work. You know, we got out there and we did it.
Not in my field, at least. You went out there and you did it. They gave you a real thing and said, here, go fix this. Oh,
because
okay.
You had to learn it. You had to learn it.
So everybody knows the CFAA is stank and needs to go. Where do you think, and I'm gonna give you my thoughts, but where do you think this kind of legislation and, you know, legislation with execution should stand going forward? You know, I keep talking about the Breach Verification Act that Senator Warner and some others are kind of putting together that requires companies to, you know, report any kind of breach within 24 hours. I love that idea. I think it's great. I think there's a lot of complexity and sub this and sub this that goes along with that. Tell me what you think about that.
I think that it all sounds good on paper, but the reality is what happens you have these organizations and they're looking for every single loophole they could find to not disclose that breach. And that's the reality of it. And a perfect example of that is when we did Ford research and we had access to, a portal that had manufacturing information and had all the employees in there and ticketing and all sorts of stuff. Like we could, if we wanted to, we could have absolutely exfiltrated this data. And then it makes you wonder, okay, well, who's had access to this, right? But then, you know, I'm not getting responses from them. They're not disclosing my stuff. It's been past 90 days. And they're like, no, well, HackerOne says 180. And you have to wonder.
And then they start getting the lawyers involved to make it sound like, you know, well, it never was a breach until you saw it or you did it.
Right. Because then it's like, oh, well, you know, a breach is when data gets exfiltrated and this was reported responsibly through this program. Okay. But did you have a SIM behind that? Like, were you looking through the logs? Do you have evidence that proves that data was not exfiltrated? Yeah. And when you flip the line of questioning around and start to think about it like that, it's like, uh-oh, yeah, they probably should have told someone. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yes. But I feel like I'm going to use a very local example of this because I just witnessed it this weekend. It's so funny. I've lived in my neighborhood for quite some time, on and off for 15 years in the same neighborhood. And this weekend, the fireworks were crazy in this neighborhood. I mean, they were out of control. They were everywhere. And like, I'm not talking about the crappy small ones. I'm talking about the full airborne, beautiful blast, glory, hallelujah. But the years before this, there was never any. It was so quiet. And do you know what it was? Is that this year it was made illegal. As soon as it was made illegal, everyone and their mom went out and bought everything that they could to do. But if you think about it in kind of the perspective of what we have here, you know, right now, companies and organizations and nation states are doing everything that they can to shift the blame when something comes up because they're never going to want to report. They're never going to want to publicly release that. And if they have to publicly release it, it's going to be probably 18 months to 3 years later when they have found people that can come on and do investigation for them internally because they probably don't have that capability. They've had all the lawyers look at all of the things. And then when it comes out, there's still question over how the breach, was initiated, if it was by the hacker or if it was by an entirely different threat actor. This frustrates me.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there just needs to be extremely stringent penalties for not disclosing this type of breach. And I think that's the reality of it. If there's not serious penalties, then people are going to do what they can to kind of just dodge around that.
You gotta have teeth.
But you know, there's so many aspects of it too, though. Like, it requires these organizations to be open and understand how to communicate with media as well.
100%.
Because they'll try to avoid that 100%. But I'll tell you right now, I don't know any hackers that are going to go research on vulnerability disclosure programs if they're not getting some sort of credibility that they could use in the future, like to an employer, like, oh, hey, I breached this organization and here's my really awesome write-up and media disclosure. I mean, it's not all about that. But, you know, when you're talking about the ethical hackers, right, they don't work for free. They don't work for free. And the people that work for free, well, you're not going to like what they do with the data, which is just dump it to a paste bin.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's just one of those things that needs to be addressed. And I think the information security field is so behind in bridging together the gaps between the hacker communities, because they're just so allergic to black hats and hacktivism and gray hats and hackers that aren't going to keep their mouth shut when they find something that's important and everyone's ignoring them. They're just allergic to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the word hacktivist. How does that kind of play into all of this?
Yeah, I mean, hacktivism is, you know, it's one of those aspects that it makes people cringe when they hear it because they automatically think someone out there just ruining a company, right? But I think the reality is hacktivism is it's got its own place. I think it does, because hacktivism has a place to expose things that are bad, wrongdoing, right? Like cover-ups. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that everyone should be involved in hacktivism in that sense, because, you know, that's where it gets complex with the laws and stuff like that. But I think people should be open to embracing all hacker cultures. You can't just embrace one little tiny subcategory of hacking culture when hacking itself came from hacktivism. It really did.
That point is, I love that point, and it's very targeted, but I have a follow-up question on that. So sure. If that's the case, how do we feel about hackers who are, you know, imposing ransomware on hundreds of companies at a time and requiring money for that?
Easy. They're criminals. those people are criminals. You're talking about people that are literally in it for the money. I'll be honest with you. I've never met a hacktivist, and I've met a lot of hacktivists, and I've never met a hacktivist out there dropping ransomware for money. I haven't. And it's not because they won't talk about it, because they love talking about their hacks. It's their favorite thing to do. And I'll tell you right now, they don't do that. They don't care about the money. Some of my friends, you know, that are hacktivists, one of them in particular I always think of is, he goes by Kurt Tanner, right? The founder of Anonymous. Mm-hmm. He lives very, very simple when it comes to money. You know, he's not out there balling. He's not out there with millions of dollars because he dropped ransomware. He's out there doing what would be considered ethical. And that's where it gets really complex with the
terminology. The
terminology.
Yep. That's crazy. I mean, it's all crazy, but it's crazy that sometimes you have to be a hacker or hacktivist to understand the complexities of, you know, corporations and business and how these things work. And then on the flip side of that, I 100% agree with you about the term criminal, because that is exactly what it is. When you start doing anything for profit, for terror, for, you know, any of these things, it's going to take you into a different place.
Yeah. And I, when you think of like, the kind of war that's going on with psychological operations and social media influence and politics, when you think about that, and you think about a platform like Getter, I don't know if you've heard everything that's been going on with Getter lately, but if you've been on that app and you look around, you'll run into neo-Nazis and people like that within the first 5 minutes of being on that platform. And you have to ask yourself, do you care if a hacker goes and starts disrupting parts of the platform that are harboring neo-Nazis? Because to me, I would say that's ethical, right? But you ask someone else, you ask the US government, they would say, that's illegal, right? You have someone out here going and taking advantage of an application. Well, I don't look at it that way. I'm talking about literally people that are fighting a cyber war against terroristic type people.
Terrorists and cyber criminals, global cyber criminals. You know, on that point, there was an article that was just posted, I think 2 days ago, about how the hackers are now self-organizing into like investors, and they invest in each other, and they're basically turning into we corporations of themselves. That makes so much sense. I mean, it really does. And it hurts my mind to think of the fact that we didn't really think that was going to come, right? Because that's what always happens in crime. That's what always happens when there's something that can be used against society or humanity. And, you know, hey, 1920s, you know, and throughout the history of Chicago, I grew up in Chicago. You know, you talk about gangs, and you talk about, all of these kinds of things that have happened since, you know, the beginning of our country. And how do we say that those things are just irregular or anomalies? But that's not true. If you look at the entire history of crime in the world, it always evolves into that. Whenever something is hot, is a hot market, whether it's tobacco or alcohol or drugs, there are going to be criminals that will criminalize everything about that.
Right.
All right. And then soapbox moment.
I mean, you have that criminal intent, and then you also have the a matter of disinformation and intention to push one's agenda, right? And disinformation is warfare in its own sense, in the cyber sense. So it's like it's taken a shift to where criminal behavior is becoming disinformation and psychological operations and ransomware mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And hacktivists are some of the best people to combat that kind of stuff. But the government is so allergic to them when they should really be figuring out, okay, how can they rework? Yeah, how can they rework the government structure to fit in more hackers?
Yep. I agree with that. I think that, I brought it up before, this whole Breach Act. And I know a lot of folks on the Hill are working on what that looks like. And maybe there's an organization that manages it. And maybe there's regulation and maybe there's not. My immediate thought, there has to be regulation 100%. Because until you regulate it, nobody's going to do it. DHS experienced the same thing with the chemical sector in 2005, 2006, after we saw lots and lots and lots of bomb making materials being out there for anybody to buy and anybody to get at any point. And chemical facilities just kind of storing all of these sweet chemicals that could blow up an entire town or likely the four surrounding towns around it. That was really the first time that DHS had the opportunity to get that regulation in place. And they set up an entire regulatory body underneath DHS to just go after that. And I think people are naive if they think that we have to avoid legislation, especially when it comes to critical infrastructure. But when it comes to cyber, when it comes to all of that, every single thing that we talk about is sitting on top of that one medium. And until we get, out of what everybody's been calling the wild, wild west, which I hate, how about we get into the actual business of cybersecurity and do the things that we have to do? You know, you also mentioned warfare.
Yeah,
I'm right there with you as a soldier. It is warfare. It's 100% warfare. And I don't like how people are constantly trying to make that sound like, oh, they're just criminals and they're just looking for money. And no, this is a war. This is a war when it comes to cybersecurity.
Yeah. And it expands way past just exploiting a network. I mean, you're talking about social engineering for years and planting psychological operations so deep within society that, you manipulate entire subcategories of people into believing something. And when you can do that, you can exploit anything you want,
yep.
Because there is a psychological factor to it as well. And I think the government, like, we need to have that structure and we need to rework the laws, but we also need to be able to adapt to not make it so corporate, right? Because I don't know any people on the darker side of the hacking spectrum that, don't smoke weed or don't use drugs or don't, XYZ, right? And when you think about all of those factors, the government won't even take them for jobs. They don't want to work with them. They don't want anything to do with them. There just needs to be so many different things that get reworked and we're pretty far behind.
100%. I think we're getting close on our time here, but sure. I want to throw out an idea and see if you're interested in participating in that. There's a couple of bills on the floor right now, not just the breach verification one that I talked about, where I think that these kinds of, things need to be written in. But I also think that we need to have a community of hackers that is actually helping to draft something that makes sense to give to them and say, here are the problems that we are facing. And here's why this is failing for all of us. And none of us are getting anything out of this. And kind of work from there. You want to work on that with me? Let's find some hackers and sit down and have a drink and talk about all the ways that this could be better and get them on paper.
I know it's been a packers from, like I said, all sides of the spectrum, and I would be willing to reach out to everyone and get awesome. Anyone involved in it.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Cool. I'm down. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming. It was great chatting with you, and I'm going to definitely have to have you come back because there's so many things we didn't get to.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the National Blast Podcast with Keenan Skelly.
If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.